You are listening to Primary Care Perspectives, a podcast where pediatric experts from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and other guests discuss primary care issues that are on their minds and the hot topics that all pediatricians see affecting their daily practice. This podcast is for general informational and educational purposes only and is not to be considered as medical advice for any particular patient. Clinicians must rely on their own informed clinical judgment in making recommendations to their patients. Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Lockwood, a primary care pediatrician at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and today I'm talking about Marfan syndrome. Joining me is Dr. Stacy Kalish, a clinical geneticist with the Division of Human Genetics at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Welcome, Dr. Kalish.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk about this with you as I know this is your area of expertise. And it's so important for us to talk about because Marfan syndrome occurs in 1 out of 5,000 to 1 out of 10,000 people and has an autosomal dominant inheritance, and 75% of cases are inherited. This is one reason that asking a family history is so important, both in screening and making the diagnosis. But there are also more than 35 identified distinct heritable disorders of connective tissue, and these can have overlapping features. This can be a lot for a primary care pediatrician who doesn't see and do this every day. So my first question that I have for you is, does a family history of another connective tissue disorder make a diagnosis of Marfan syndrome more likely?
So it's a good question, and you're right. There are many distinct inherited connective tissue disorders, but having a family history of one does not put you at higher risk of having another. That said, there are many families that report a family history of Marfan syndrome that may actually have a history of a similar condition, like Loeys-Dietz syndrome or congenital contractural arachnodactyly or others. And this happens because Marfan syndrome is the most well-known of all of these conditions. It was also recognized before some of the other conditions, and some families were diagnosed before genetic testing was available. So it's always important to have a full evaluation with an experienced geneticist to confirm a diagnosis.
That's great. That's so helpful. And I think one of the things that makes Marfan syndrome so complicated is that one of the clinical characteristics is that it's a multi-system disease. So can you walk us through some of the most common findings in all of these different systems?
Sure. So we generally think about three main systems in Marfan syndrome, but other systems can be involved as well. So the three main systems that we think about are the eyes, the heart, and the skeleton. From the eye perspective, ectopia lentis, which is a dislocation or subluxation of the lens, is really a characteristic finding, but we can also see significant or high myopia. The cardiac features, I think, are probably most well known, and the characteristic finding is really aortic dilation with a risk of dissection, and mitral valve prolapse is also associated. And from the skeletal perspective, we can see a lot of different features. So these include being taller than expected for the family, having dolichostenomelia, which means having both an increased arm span to height ratio and a reduced upper to lower segment ratio, or having longer than expected arms and legs for your body. We also can see pectus excavatum or carinatum, scoliosis, arachnodactyly, and pes planus with or without hindfoot pronation. But we know that another common presentation can impact the lungs, and sometimes spontaneous pneumothorax is the first thing that brings someone to attention.
Well, you're bringing me right back to medical school, so thank you for that refresher. Now, you mentioned some of those skeletal manifestations, and I'm wondering, as a primary care doctor who spends a lot of time looking at growth charts, how might growth charts be useful in the diagnosis of Marfan syndrome, or are they not?
So it's a great question, and I hope that you noticed that I said taller than expected for the family and not tall stature a minute ago. So one of the most common things that I say in talking about an evaluation for Marfan syndrome is that the most common cause of tall children is tall parents. It's really important to compare a child's height to their expected mid-parental height.
Right.
So I usually use myself as an example. You can't see me, but I'm 5'1", which is exactly at my mid-parental height. So if I was 5'6", you might not pick me out as tall walking down the street, right, and I would be on the growth chart at like the 75th percentile, but I'd be way taller than expected for my family. And if you were my pediatrician, this should lead you to consider causes of tall stature. So in genetics, we often end up seeing these tall kids whose heights are above the growth curve, regardless of how tall they're predicted to be based on their families. So it's really important to compare actual height to expected mid-parental height. And Epic can actually do this for you. If you enter the parent's heights into the growth chart, it will calculate a mid-parental height and show it on the growth chart.
Right. That's so helpful because it's not as simple as just averaging the parents' heights, right? If you're female, it's factored a little bit heavier towards your mother's height and vice versa for men and their fathers.
Correct. So it's a little bit less than the average of the two numbers if you're female and a little bit more than the two numbers if you're male.
Yeah, great. Now, when someone's described as having a Marfanoid appearance, what does that actually mean? And does everyone with Marfan syndrome have a Marfanoid appearance and vice versa?
The term Marfanoid really refers to the skeletal features of Marfan syndrome. So like we talked about before, typically we're thinking about tall, thin stature, the appearance of arachnodactyly and long limbs, though it's important to know that there are actually measurements for these, so not all long-appearing arms or fingers are actually longer than they should be. Mm-hmm. We also see pectus excavatum and carinatum, scoliosis, and pes planus. But not everyone who has Marfan syndrome has a Marfanoid appearance. There's significant variability among those with Marfan syndrome, and some just have fewer skeletal features. Of the kids that I've seen from Marfanoid habitus, and it's usually adolescents, very few actually have Marfan syndrome.
Hmm.
I looked recently at my patient history at CHOP, and I have only diagnosed a handful of kids with Marfan syndrome due to Marfanoid habitus alone. So this is excluding those who had ectopia lentis or aortic enlargement or known family history of Marfan syndrome.
Right.
And of the Marfanoid kids who did turn out to have Marfan syndrome, some features that stuck out to me were that they tended to have earlier onset and significant scoliosis, facial features that are consistent with Marfan syndrome, and pes planus with hindfoot pronation. Some studies have also looked at distinguishing Marfanoid habitus from Marfan syndrome, and these have suggested that pectus carinatum specifically and significant myopia are also more concerning for Marfan syndrome.
That's so interesting. So early scoliosis really stood out, and myopia and pectus carinatum. That's very fascinating. And these are things that we see a lot, or maybe not a lot, but we see often enough. But what I love about you, geneticists, is that you really do help put all of these pieces together, right? Because not everybody who has pectus carinatum is going to have Marfan syndrome. And so I'm curious more about how you are making the diagnosis. Is it really just your diligence of looking at all of these different systems, or are you now shifting more towards gene testing, which is something that we know has become more and more sophisticated over time? So I'm wondering, is it a combination of both, or how are you making this diagnosis in your clinic?
So it's a great question. And, you know, as geneticists, I think that's exactly what we do. We sort of take pieces of a puzzle and try to put them together to see if we can find the solution. For Marfan syndrome specifically, there are clinical diagnostic criteria to make a diagnosis. And these are called the Gent criteria. And there's a list of criteria for those with and those without confirmed family history. And they're based on the three main systems that we talked about earlier. So for some individuals, we can make a diagnosis clinically based on these criteria without needing genetic testing. We may still offer genetic testing to those patients to gather specific molecular information for testing additional relatives, but the diagnosis can be made without the test. Experienced providers also can rule out Marfan syndrome in many individuals with clinical evaluation alone, but we will use genetic testing when we're not 100% certain based on clinical evaluation. Mm. And genetic testing then can be helpful to even more fully rule out the condition. We don't really want to miss a diagnosis of Marfan syndrome since it can impact management.
Mm-hmm. And for those of us who aren't geneticists and might not memorize the Gent criteria, is there an easy reference or tool that we could use that we could potentially look at to determine the likelihood that someone has Marfan syndrome based on the features that we are observing?
Sure. So the Marfan Foundation website, which is just marfan.org, has a ton of useful information. It includes the clinical diagnostic criteria for Marfan syndrome, those Gent criteria. It also includes images of all of the skeletal features that are used in assessing to help you remember what they look like and how to use them. It's important to keep in mind, however, that not all features are present in all individuals and that these features can develop over time. and also that a correct family history plays a role in using these diagnostic criteria. And that's why we use both clinical evaluation and genetic testing in both making and ruling out diagnoses individualized to the patient. I'd estimate that for about half of the children and adolescents that I evaluate for possible Marfan syndrome, we recommend to have genetic testing, most generally to fully rule out the condition.
That's helpful. Thank you for sharing all of that, because it is complex, and we appreciate, even though we might have a suspicion for Marfan syndrome, having experts like yourself really help tease that apart for us, whether genetic testing is needed or if it's clinically a diagnosis that you're able to make. The time that I think about Marfan syndrome the most is typically during the pediatric pre-participation sports physical clearance, because the forms have a category about whether or not the patient has, quote, Marfan stigmata, which it describes as kyphoscoliosis, high arched palate, pectus excavatum, arachnodactyly, hyperlaxity, myopia, mitral valve prolapse, and aortic insufficiency. So if these are present, should we be referring these patients for an evaluation by a geneticist? And in the meantime, do I need to have them avoid sports?
So this is really a judgment call, and I know that it's a tough one. I'd say that for children and adolescents with one or a few of these that are mild, referral is not necessarily required. We know that many individuals, and we've already talked about this, many individuals have mild pectus excavatum or mild idiopathic scoliosis. And myopia is super common, and these criteria don't even specify that the Gent criteria specifies significant myopia.
Right.
So I think that if you're evaluating someone and you're not sure as their primary care provider that they don't have Marfan syndrome, then it's reasonable for them to be evaluated. But unless they have known aortic enlargement or cardiac symptoms, there's no need to prevent them from playing in the meantime.
That's great. That's really helpful to know, because obviously this comes up a lot for us in primary care.
Yes, and it causes significant stress and anxiety for the children who want to participate in sports and for their families. And then I'm sure for the primary care providers who don't want to keep them out of playing, but also want to keep them safe.
Definitely. Well, you've given us a lot of information to reflect back on too, for those who are doing their sports participation clearance and are wondering about Marfan stigmata. So now you've really educated us on the full picture of what we should be looking out for. Now, when we do have a concern and we're going to refer, for those who are close enough to potentially refer a patient to you at CHOP, can you tell us where to find you and tell us a little bit about the Cardiovascular Connective Tissue Disorders Clinic and what that includes, and maybe why we would want patients to go to a place like that rather than someplace that's not as maybe comprehensive?
Sure. So we have a combined cardiology, genetics, connective tissue clinic at CHOP. The clinic is staffed by me and by a cardiologist with experience and interest in inherited connective tissue disorders, Dr. Stacy Drand. We see patients only in University City, but what we'll do in a visit is a full evaluation with the echocardiogram and an evaluation with each of us. And so this has been really helpful in allowing us to make or to rule out diagnoses in a single visit. And we also see patients with known inherited connective tissue disorders in the clinic for ongoing management. And so I think in our experience before we had this clinic together, many patients saw either genetics or cardiology first. The cardiologists, even with a normal echocardiogram, often were not able to fully rule out Marfan syndrome because we know that some of those cardiac features will occur later in age. And for us as geneticists, if we were on the fence, we weren't able to fully rule out Marfan syndrome without that echocardiogram information. So being able to do these two visits together really allows us to gather all the information that we need and to determine at that point if genetic testing is required, if additional evaluations are required, or if we can rule these out, these conditions out, and reassure everybody.
Yeah, it's so helpful for patients to have both of those visits in one place and the time saving. And as we mentioned in our last discussion point about the sports physical clearance, there's often a lot of emotion that comes, you know, when, as a primary care doctor, when we tell a family that we're worried about Marfan syndrome, I know that they go home and Google it, and there can be some scary things that they might be reading and worrying about, particularly when you're thinking about your child's heart and that anxiety of waiting for a diagnosis. It's so nice to have both pieces of that evaluation done in the same visit and time period so that they can really feel like they're getting all of their answers at one place. So I'm so glad you did that.
It's been a really nice partnership for us as well. I would say that as a primary care doctor who brings up this concern, saying to a family, you know, I think that we should have you evaluated for Marfan syndrome, it can be helpful for you to know and for you to share with families that this is most of the time, again, we do not find Marfan syndrome. Mm-hmm. In fact, in half of the cases, we could rule it out clinically without even needing genetic testing. And so I think framing this as you likely do not have Marfan syndrome, but we want to be sure to keep you safe can hopefully help relieve some of that anxiety to begin with. We do have a consult order in Epic. So you can put in a consult to connective tissue disease, and that will come to our combined team, and we can review the consult in the chart and then determine how to best schedule the patient.
And for those who aren't at CHOP, is there another way that they can reach out and refer patients to you?
Sure, you can call through the genetics office. So that number is 215-590-2920. And they'll do an intake and ask you a number of questions about your patient and then send the information to our team. So again, we can triage the patient appropriately.
Great. Thank you so much. This has been such a great review for us of Marfan syndrome. You've highlighted some really key teaching pearls that will stick with me. And I really appreciate this. As I said, you know, it may be a disease that's not so common, but it's something that we think about often in terms of trying to rule out, particularly around sports participation and when we're looking at those growth charts. So thank you for touching on so many important points and for the service that you provide to our families at CHOP.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Primary Care Perspectives. You can download and subscribe to future episodes on iTunes or visit chop.edu/PCP podcast for a listing of all episodes. I look forward to our next chat.